Joining us now, former GM of the Pats and the Kansas City Chiefs. You see him on NFL Network. Friend of the show, our guy Scott Pioli. Scott, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, never mind friend of the show. I'm a friend of you guys.
That is true.
So if that is the case, we would both like an invite to Nantucket.
Oh, dear Lord. I've never been. I'm not allowed.
Pioli, well, we moved. We don't let folk like you and 4A over here, man.
No, that's fine. No, we would especially
totally
since,
fine. You know,
we
I tell you, I'm glad it was so funny. I don't know if you guys heard, but I was trying to Christian. I was texting you. I couldn't get through on the phone. This is like classic draft day stuff. You're trying to get a hold of a prospect, let them know you're picking them, and the phones aren't working. Little drama we had getting together here this morning, guys. Oh, you still got me.
So the Gremlins got us in Detroit. What are you going to do? We're going to go right back to the phones with Scott Pioli to talk about everything draft. Scott, thanks for hanging on. We appreciate you. And I know I had the long answer and we dropped out, but basically when you were a GM, Scott, how much did you try to use the media to run subterfuge, get what you want, smoke somebody out on a trade? Because I'm betwixt and between on what we're hearing out of Foxborough these days.
Yeah, hang on one second, Gresh. Before we get back to this, you guys are just going to go right past that major fail you just had. I mean, it's draft day and your phones aren't working?
Yeah, you know what?
Oh,
we fumbled the pick. You know what?
Get a hold of the pick? I mean,
yeah, we got nervous. We're role playing if we're Elliot Wolf.
We're like the Mike Tice Minnesota Vikings. We missed our pick. Now we got to run it up there.
Hey, that's going to be Elliot's line. He's going to say, "Hey, listen, guys, don't complain about my pick, no matter what it is. Because you can't even get your phones to work on draft day, so I beat you there." So he's one up on you guys. I won you guys nothing.
Oh, my God.
But, no, Gresh, to go back to your question, you know, I was – well, first of all, I think you guys know I rarely – in my decade there, I was rarely in the media. I never did any – again, if you go back, things have changed. Bill was the one that spoke pre-draft. He was the one that spoke post-draft. So I never interacted with the media, you know, on or off the record. So sending signals or information or misinformation out there, my thing is this, you know, when I look at there's different kinds of misinformation, right? You could send a story out there that maybe you guys or maybe your team's looking to do this or, but here's the misinformation that I see the most that I really struggle with and squirm with. Is the people, whoever the folks are, and the finger always gets pointed at the teams when there's misinformation about kids out there and the players. I call them kids, but the players. And when people are doing things in order to elevate their prospect or to maneuver or maybe make things fall the way that they want to get a player, or if there's an agent trying to elevate his own player who's putting misinformation out there about a kid who's worked his entire life to get to a certain space and to be drafted, that stuff I have no patience or tolerance for. I think it's one of the most mean-spirited things you can do. And, you know, I've seen people, I've seen whether it's media folks, I've seen agents, and I have seen some people from the clubs beating up a player or leaking, like the C.J. Stroud stuff last year. I mean, totally, totally unnecessary. I understand he ended up in a great place. He ended up where he was supposed to be. But that doesn't always happen when misinformation gets out there. So, you know, my feelings, you concentrate on what your job is. Get the evaluation right. Get the identification right. Do your job the way you're supposed to do it. And there's no need to lie to folks. And again, like if I was talking to you guys before the draft, what purpose would it serve our relationship if I was lying to you? Right.
No, I get it, but I'm curious. I'm curious, Scott, because what GM worth anything is going to allow himself to be influenced by something he sees on TV?
Yeah, you know, Christian, this is an incredible question because they shouldn't. And that's why, you know, I wanted to talk about this topic on NFL Network and we didn't get the time. But we're looking at this draft, and all of a sudden we're hearing that there's going to be four quarterbacks, all these quarterbacks that have elevated out of nowhere. And part of the reason and the purpose is that they've elevated is that it's all anyone's talking about in the media, right? And not just in New England, right? New England's talking about it. The New England media is because there's a need for a quarterback. But the national media, there's so much focus being put on quarterbacks, 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 that there's this avalanche, and we see people fighting and trading to get up to take a quarterback that isn't necessarily one of the best players. And then when you talk to people in the positions that are going to make decisions, they don't understand why these quarterbacks are running up the boards. But the point that I'm making is there's so much – I don't think we give enough credit to the fans as to how intelligent they are about football and how smart they want to be. They want to hear more about quarterbacks. So I think teams, unfortunately, are starting to be influenced. I mean, just go back to, what is it, the 2021 draft. Five quarterbacks taken in the top 15. Now, at the end of the season, the college season that year, I don't think that there were five quarterbacks ranked that high. But five went in the top 15, and four of those five have already been traded. And not one of the players that's been traded has gotten back anything more than a third-day pick.
Now, Scott, is that because they're overdrafted or because the need is so great?
Well, yes, there's a need to get a quarterback. I mean, I totally get it. Yes, it's a need to get a quarterback. But, and again, I'm not saying that the San Francisco 49ers model or our model with Brady is going to happen. That's lightning in a bottle. But you don't have to get a great quarterback at the top of the draft. And yes, you need the quarterback. There's no doubt you need a quarterback to be successful and to sustain success. But to alter your draft board to go out of need versus best player available, to me, doesn't always make sense. And it's which is coming first, the chicken or the egg on this?
Scott Pioli with Gresh and Fourier here on WEEI talking about the NFL draft. First round is tonight. Patriots are sitting at number 3. Scott, I saw a thing the other day on how the amount of picks needed to move up is just so enormous now. What is a bigger factor in trades, in your opinion, at the highest level in the draft? Is it, you know, that whole prohibitive cost of getting up there? But is giving up all those picks worth it? Because contractually, you're not handing a guy $60 million guaranteed anymore at the top of the draft and almost being automatically married to them. Is it the money or the picks that has changed maybe the way people have viewed moving up and down in the first round?
You know, Gresh, I think it's a combination of those two things. And again, usually when you move, if you move up, you're moving up to get a specific player. Again, this one isn't sexy, but when we moved up, you know, many years ago to take Ty Warren, we were moving up to take Ty Warren, right? That was the 2003 draft. We moved up one spot because we wanted to make sure we were, you know, we were going to get the guy. But when you look at what teams are doing and they give up, I just don't like that philosophy. Because here's the deal, and not many general managers want to say this out loud, not many, or, you know, whatever the job is, whoever's making the picks, you're going to get it wrong more often than you're going to get it right. So if you've only got your seven picks and you've got seven swings at bat, it's probably not going to end up well. You need to gather picks, collect picks to get more swings in order to get more hits. That's just the reality, but just own and understand that, you know, you're not that smart. You're not that good. You're going to do the best job you can. Hopefully your process will put you in the right place. But when I see teams giving up all that currency to move up, you have to get it right. Because if you don't, it can cripple the organization for years.
And Scott, and that's kind of why I like when we're talking to Scott Pioli. And when I see like what's coming out of the Patriots, like this emphasis and this, you know, paraphrasing their own words from Elliot Wolf and Gerard Mayo, how important it is to get this right. I feel like they're putting so much pressure. Like the whole franchise is predicated on this number 3 pick and them getting it right and choosing the right quarterback. I'm just curious how you feel about their approach and how they've handled it so far.
Yeah, you know, so far listening to them, getting it right, you know, and I think Elliott's doing a good job of being vague there. Getting it right doesn't mean that getting it right is taking the exact specific player at number three if it's a player that, you know, unless it's a player that they really love. So maybe he's saying getting it right is moving back to number five or to number six, still getting a quarterback that they like and getting more picks. We don't know what his, you know, what his description or definition of getting it right is. Is there a lot of pressure up there? Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I mean, in my first year in Kansas City, I had the number three pick overall, and that was, you know, and it's shown to be historically one of the worst drafts ever. And we were comfortable with the person we took and Tyson Jackson, who we thought was going to be a cornerstone for our defense and the defense we're going to run. I mean, the guy ends up being a 10-year starter, but it's not what, you know, a starting defensive lineman that doesn't get sacks isn't necessarily what you're, you know, what you're hoping to get. The problem was we couldn't move out. So in terms of Elliott getting it right and Gerard getting it right, the franchise getting it right, you know, we don't know if that's a certain quarterback or moving back, which, again, I would encourage fans that if Elliott and Gerard and the team decides to move back a little bit because they have a quarterback they think that they can get a little bit later and add currency, I would say, you know, hey, right on. You know, just give them some room to breathe and let them develop the quarterback.
Scott Pioli with us just for a few more minutes here on Gresham Fourier. How did you or do you as a GM balance an owner who is like, oh boy, I maybe have the wheel for the first time here, or I've got the influence and maybe it's oppo of what you're thinking in terms of what you would like to do in the draft. Is that as big a thing as people make it out to be? Do you have to give the owner the stiff arm a little bit or jump up on the table and say, no, we need to do this for this reason?
You know, fortunately, Gresh, I was, you know, even with all the teams that I was ever with, that was never a factor. Even when I was a slappy in Cleveland, you know, for Bill and Cleveland. You know, seriously, Art Modell didn't tell Bill who to draft. When we, you know, from there we went to, you know, we went to Baltimore, and it's a fascinating story. In Baltimore, we got there in '96. I was, you know, Bill had been fired. I was there in '96. And Ozzie didn't even have the title of general manager. There was no general manager. There was no head of player personnel. Ted Marchibroda was the head coach. And even though Ozzie was the final say-so, you know, the owner wanted Ozzie to draft Lawrence Phillips in 96.
Running back out of Nebraska.
But exactly right, who, you know, ended up going to jail and hung himself in prison. God rest his soul. I mean, And we knew that there was trouble there. So what we ended up doing with the fourth pick overall that year is exactly what Ozzie wanted, what Ted Marchibroda wanted, what Kirk Ferentz wanted, what Phil Savage wanted, what I wanted, which was to draft Jonathan Ogden. And Art made it clear what he wanted, but said, Ozzie, do what you want to do. And that changed the franchise. And then again, all those years with the decade with the Patriots, Robert never told us what to do. And truthfully, Bill would not have put himself in that role, nor would I have gone up there, or Ernie Adams. The three of us would not have been in those seats if it was going to be done that way. And then Clark Hunt never did it. So, Gresh, I don't know exactly how to answer it other than
I think you did.
You know, if I
you
was,
did? Yeah, I think you did.
If I was in that role, I wouldn't join an organization where I was being told what to do, because then they really didn't need me. I'd be useless.
Yeah. So listen, last one for me before we got to go, Scott, is, okay, you're the GM. You wake up in the morning. It's draft day. Like, what's going through your mind? What's your routine? Like, what's the anticipation like for you on draft day?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Christian, because it changed so much over my years, right? The draft didn't used to be the thing that went on at prime time. It started, you know, in the mornings. It was a two-day thing, and it started in the morning. So it evolved and changed over the years. But I know a lot of GMs and head coach, they play golf. I've never played golf in my life. You know, unless there's windmills and elephants on the course, you know, I'm not playing golf. So I just found a way to relax. I always got a workout in. You know, I would just find a way to to try to not think about the enormity of the day and to try to decompress and relax.
So you're not running scenarios through your head. You're not role-playing a situation, trying to get out of the third pick, right? None of that stuff.
No, if you're having to do that stuff this morning, you've lost already. I mean, that was one of the great things I learned in my early years working under Bill in Cleveland was the preparation component and how important it was. And you need to run those scenarios. You need to do all those things. And then you need to be prepared. But you also need to have your mind and soul rested and comfortable so you can work with confidence. And work with confidence, but also understand that there's going to be so many things out of your control. And if you start the anxiety early in the morning, you know, emotionally you're going to be exhausted because you're sitting there at number three or let's just say you're at number five or six. You may end up picking because of trade somewhere in the late 20s because that's what you choose to do. And if you've worn yourself out emotionally, again, you're just not going to be prepared for the moment. The preparation needs to be completed long ago.
Well, I would dare say that if there was ever, in those days of Scott Pioli getting a pump in before the draft, if there was ever a GM bench press record that needed to be set,
he's going
to
win it.
Pioli was going to set that.
I've seen him in there over
a Spielman, I would say, as well. Scott, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you, and we love talking to you, and hopefully we see you over the summer. Thank you.
I hope so, too, guys. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.